All right, thanks, Chong, for hosting me. It's always a pleasure to come to PI. Think of PI as a haven for theoretical physics, where we can freely do theory without apologizing. So it's great. So what I'll try to do in this talk is to connect fancy theoretical ideas to phenomena that are probably within experimental reach in condensed matter physics in the short term. That's the dream, at least. I don't have to get through the entire talk. I just want to stimulate discussion and so on. So keep asking me questions. Wherever Chong tells me to stop, I'll just stop. All right. So the work was done with two absolutely wonderful collaborators. Shiyang Song is a postdoc now and a close friend of mentee of the current PI faculty. And Yohei Zhang is a faculty member at Johns Hopkins. And we've had a lot of fun talking about this project. And we hope to have a lot more fun in the coming months, but let's see. So the talk is on the fractional quantum Hall effect, and presumably everyone here has seen this this trace. If you haven't, if you're a beginning student, I strongly urge you to take how many hour weeks of your life is needed to study the physics of this phenomenon. It's one of the most remarkable phenomena that's been observed in materials in a long, long time, in many decades, probably even longer than that. So this is the quantum Hall effect, and it happens, the usual setting is for electrons moving in two space dimensions in a strong magnetic field, and the electrons form Lander levels, and they interact with each other through Coulomb repulsion, and disorder plays a role as well. So that's the story. Now, early on in the history of the quantum Hall effect, people imagined the possibility of an integer quantum Hall effect without an external magnetic field. David Tholis and Duncan Haldane, and was part of what got them the Nobel Prize. So the idea is that if you have electrons moving on a lattice in two dimensions, if you form a band insulator where you fill an integer number of bands with a net churn number, then you'll get a new state of matter, which perhaps could be referred, is often described as a churn insulator. And this churn insulator is an integer quantum Hall effect coming from the churn number of the filled bands. And a special case of a churn insulator is what people often call an integer quantum anomalous Hall effect. So clearly, to get the net non-zero churn number, you had to break time reversal symmetry. To get a Hall conductivity, you had to break time reversal symmetry. Now, the time reversal could be broken explicitly without an external magnetic field, perhaps by engineering something in the Hamiltonian. Or it could arise through spontaneous symmetry breaking. And in the situation where it arises through spontaneous symmetry breaking, the Hall effect is known as an anomalous Hall effect. This has been discussed for decades, long before the quantum Hall effect. So if this anomalous Hall effect further is quantized, then it's appropriate to call it an integer quantum anomalous Hall effect. So this was first observed, though this was discussed theoretically in the 1980s, was first observed 10 years back by Chi-Kun Che in Beijing on magnetically doped topological insulator films. And there's by now a number of different experimental systems which show this phenomenon. A modern example is from Moiré graphene material in this paper by Andrea Young. So the hallmark of the broken time reversal symmetry is that in a magnetic field, there is hysteresis. So the answer that you get depends on whether the field is positive or negative, and you can train the sign of the effect with a magnetic field. So the hysteresis tells you that there's a spontaneous time reversal breaking. And once you go beyond this coercive field where you fully aligned all the domains in the sample, then you see a quantized Hall resistivity of just H over E squared, right? And likewise, the rho xx, the rxx goes to zero in the region where rxy is quantized, exactly as you want for integer quorum Hall state. Okay, so there's now a phenomenon that's routinely seen in the last 10 years, many, many different kinds of materials. So what about the fractional quorum Hall effect? Can that happen without a magnetic field? And the answer is certainly yes. And it was discussed theoretically. So you would imagine that if integer filling of a churn band gives you an integer quorum Hall state, that fractional filling might, if everything works out, then at fractional filling, you might realize a fractional quorum Hall effect, right? And this, the theoretical possibility of this was discussed 10 years back in a number of theory papers. This is a sample. And it was demonstrated in toy models, toy models that are simple enough, that are fine-tuned enough that the bands have churn number and are reasonably flat compared to the strength of the Coulomb interactions. So that Coulomb interactions can then drive the system into a phase where there's a fractional quorum Hall state. And these are sometimes called fractional churn insulators, right? So there is a large body of literature since 2011. But the big open question in the field was, okay, sure, this can happen, but in which kind of experimental platform are you likely to see this? And another question that some people might ask is, why is this at all interesting, right? So I hope to answer both questions in this talk. So that's the big context for what I'm going to be talking about. What's a good experimental platform and why do I find it interesting, right? So interest is in the eye of the beholder, right? So I'll explain to you why I think it's very cool. So there's rapid progress on both these questions in the last few years. So theory in the last few years said that the, one of the best places to look for this phenomenon is in Moiré materials that at least the kinesmatter people have probably heard of. So that was the theory guidance. And in experiments in twisted bilayer graphene a few years back, a fractional quorum Hall state, fractional quorum Hall states at various fillings were seen at the relatively low field of about 5 Tesla. And the scale for this is to compare this field, is to relate this field to the amount of magnetic flux that pierces each plaquette to the lattice, right? So that flux is a small fraction of the flux quantum. So this is, should be considered as a weak field. So it's sort of getting there. But what's happened in the last few months is there's a bona fide discovery of a zero field quantum Hall, fractional quantum Hall effect in another Moiré system, which I'll describe, just twisted transition metal dichalcogenides. There's very likely a lot more to come. There's a lot of experiments in the pipeline, and we'll probably see this this phenomenon become routine as an experimental phenomenon, just like the integer quantum anomalous Hall effect became routine after the initial discovery 10 years back. Okay, so I don't know how much people know about Moiré materials, so I'll spend a few slides introducing or reminding you of what these are. So this is really an explosion of research in kinesmatter physics in the last 5 years, kicked off by my colleague, Pablo Jario Herrero. So the idea is that you take two monolayers of some material or different materials, which are slightly different from each other, right? The slight difference could be in the orientation, the relative orientation, or could be in the lattice spacing, right? There may be two slightly different the lattice spacings may be slightly different. And you put these on top of each other, right? So two atomically thin layers, you put them on top of each other with a slight difference. And geometrically, we know that, the interference between the two crystal patterns will lead to a long wavelength Moiré pattern. The most famous is twisted bilayer graphene. Take two graphene sheets with a slight difference in orientation, and you get this nice sort of long wavelength pattern that's known as the Moiré pattern. So we are interested in what happens to electrons moving in this structure, and the formation of this Moiré pattern has tremendously strong consequences for the electronic structure, which people have been playing around with for a while. But it turns out that under certain conditions, the electronic bands can become very flat. So then the effect of Coulomb interactions becomes very important. And that led to the phenomena that Pablo Mario Herrero first found. And then there's been the subsequent explosion where people explored all kinds of Moiré systems and found correlated phenomena. So there are some other routes in Moiré graphene, in graphene-based systems to make Moiré materials. You know, why restrict to one monolayer of graphene twisted related to the other monolayer? You can take N layers of graphene and twist it related to another M layers of graphene. Right? So people have realized various possibilities with various choices of N and M, and they enlarge the space for Moiré materials. For instance, you can do N equals M equals 2, that's called twisted double bilayer. People have done N equals 1, M equals 2, twisted mono bi, and so on and so forth. A totally different route is to take N layers of graphene and align it with a material known as hexagonal boron nitride, which is a good substrate for graphene. In fact, a lot of the experiments on graphene in the last 15 years were enabled by realizing that this is a fantastic substrate. It also has a hexagonal lattice like graphene, but the lattice spacing is slightly different from graphene, right? So then if you align these two things together, the slight lattice mismatch leads to a long period Moiré pattern. So then you have another system to play with. Now, early on, it became clear, and this work by my student, Yohei Zhang, the same person that I'm working with now, it became clear that many of these Moiré graphene systems will have nearly flat churn bands, which is exactly the kind of thing one needs to have strong Coulomb interaction when these bands are partially populated. Now, a key feature of these Moiré graphene systems and also the other systems I'll talk about is that there are two valleys corresponding to the two corners of the Bilnot zone of the original graphene layer, right? So there'll be an internal degree of freedom known as the valley degree of freedom. And in graphene, that's on top of the internal spin degree of freedom, right? So it's both spin and valley as independent internal degrees of freedom. And the system is time reversal symmetric, and time reversal takes one valley and flips it to the opposite valley, right? So in many of these systems, it turns out that there are flat bands in each of the two valleys. But since the two valleys are related by time reversal, their churn numbers have to be equal and opposite, okay? And the only question is whether the churn number is zero or non-zero, right? So it turns out there's several systems that were identified here where the churn number is non-zero, right? Which then gives us the hope that some interesting topological, correlated topological physics will be realized in these systems, okay? So the way that might come about is a very simple story for what could happen. So if you partially fill these Moiré bands in two valleys with plus minus churn number, and let's say you focus on a total band filling of 1 or 3, so this count includes the internal spin and valley degrees of freedom. Now, if you just do a simple Hartree-Fock theory of the interactions, the band is flat enough. What you find is that the spin and valley polarize completely to give you a ferromagnet, right? So you start with something like this, where you have up and down spin in one valley and up and down spin in the other valley. And these valleys in the band structure are equal and opposite churn number. And you turn on interactions, and you're at a filling which is odd integer, 1 or 3. Then the interactions split this degeneracy and give you a renormalized band structure where, let's say, at filling 1, only this sector, spin up, and the K valley is occupied, and the others are unoccupied, right? So that then gives you an insulating phase if the filling is 1, this band is fully filled, And since the band has Chern number, it gives you an integer quantum Hall state. In fact, this is the route through which in the experiment that I showed from Andrea Young, which showed this quantum anomalous Hall effect, it's believed that this is the route through which from plus minus Chern bands, you through spontaneous valley polarization, you get the integer quantum Hall state. Okay, so you get ferromagnetism first, and then the presence of the Chern number leads you to an integer quantum Hall state. Okay, so. Sorry? Right, so that at filling factor two, that's a possible state. You have to think about competing states. And you know, there's many internal degrees of freedom, right? You could have intervalley coherent states and so on. But at this filling, Hartree-Fock just gives you this, right? There's not many other competing states at this filling. So this filling is well suited. And this is exactly where people see the quantum anomalous Hall state. So the question then naturally becomes, what about what happens if you then partially fill one of these Chern bands, right? And the system where this has been studied the most, both theoretically and experimentally, is twisted Baillieu graphene aligned with this boron nitride substrate. Now, there's some evidence from experiments that in a range of densities that you do get valley polarization to break time reversal, which is a precondition for this physics, and that leads to the electrons preferentially populating one Chern band instead of the band with opposite Chern number, right? And then there's theoretical work, both numerical calculations and analytic arguments that show that you could realize a fractional quantum Hall state with some reasonable gap, you know, order 1-2 Kelvin, that could be accessible in transport experiments. But so far, all that the experiments have done, which is wonderful, but perhaps doesn't go all the way, is to find a fractional quantum Hall state at relatively small but not zero magnetic fields. So this is good, and maybe the field will evolve further. I hope it evolves further to discover a true zero field state, but this is the current state of affairs. Okay?
Just to make sure that when you say small field, the magnetic flux in the Moiré unit cell is small.
Exactly. So the Moiré unit cell is very big, right? So even in a small field, you could get a big flux. But it turns out that you need 30 Tesla field to have a single flux quantum. So this very small, 5 Tesla is a small field.
Question.
Yeah.
Experimentally easier to reduce the magnetic field or to increase the size of the Moiré lattice?
You don't have much freedom with tuning the size of the Moiré lattice. You have a lot of freedom with controlling the strength of the magnetic field. So you can reduce it, but what happens is that there is a competing charged density wave state that gets stabilized at low fields. It has to do with details of the Berry curvature distribution and things like that, which is hard to control in situ, in the lab. So I want to talk next a little bit about these Moiré transition metal dichalcogenides, TMD. So TMD is materials like tungsten diselenide, tungsten disulfide, molybdenum telluride, and so on. And you form the Moiré structure in exactly the same way. You stack two TMD layers with some small difference. So people have made several such structures in the last few years. And one difference with graphene and which leads to a simplification is that there's strong spin-orbit coupling in these materials. So the spin-orbit coupling is such that the spin degree of freedom is locked to the valley degree of freedom at a very high energy scale, right? In the valence band, which is where all the interesting activity happens. So you can forget about spin and just deal with electrons with a valley degree of freedom, right? So the fewer degrees of freedom you have, the easier it is to think about it. So what we have is a problem of strongly correlated electrons moving in a single band, and there's one band for each of the two valleys. And these two valleys are related by time reversal, okay? And in some cases, there's a large phase space to explore. And in some cases, the bands of the two valleys have equal and opposite churn number. So it again, and they are flat, so it again seems like a good place to look for fractional quantum anomalous Hall physics. And this is true in some of the graphene systems as well, and it's particularly true here, that you can change the ratio of interactions to bandwidth in the same sample using just an electrical controls, using just voltages. You apply a perpendicular electric field. You have a stack like this. You apply an electric field that's perpendicular. And that electric field changes the bandwidth without changing the strength of the Coulomb interaction. Right? And this is actually a really cool possibility is what inspires some of the work that I'm going to talk about. So theoretically, people looked at, examined the band structure of some of these systems, or several of these systems. They found that if you have what's called a HOMO bilayer, you take the same TMD, two layers of it, and twist one relative to the other. So the topmost valence band, valence bands have nearly flat, they're nearly flat. Their bandwidth is very small. And they have valley churn number plus minus one. And the theory said that this happens near 1.5 degrees. So look for it. Make those devices and something cool will happen. Right? And people did some many-body calculations, exact numerical diagonalization. And they found that, once again, there's ferromagnetism through valley polarization. And there's some evidence for a fractional quantum anomalous Hall state in small system size exact diagonalization. So all of this sets the stage, right? And what it did was to motivate experimentalists to look. And it turns out they made, with this motivation, they made a big discovery, but not exactly where the theorists told them to look. So they serendipitously looked somewhere else, and they found cool things, right? So the first signature, all of the action so far has been in one particular material, twisted MOTE2, and the first signature is from a paper from March by Xiaodong Chu. So the first thing that's this plot is the proof that there is ferromagnetism in these devices. So there's valley polarization. So you see hysteresis. So exactly what is being measured is a bit, it's not that complicated. It's what's called magnetic circular dichroism. So the difference between the response to right and left circularly polarized light. But it's some probe of time reversal breaking, and you see that there's hysteresis, right? So this is the evidence that there is ferromagnetism. And in the same paper, they had a very interesting and clever way of knowing whether there's a many-body gap for the electrons near the chemical potential or not. Again, I'm not going to explain the technique. It's interesting. It involves looking at, it's an optical technique that involves looking at a bound state of three electrons, one from the valence band and an exciton formed from other bands. But using that optical sensor, they could tell, when there was a many-body gap and when there was no gap. And then what's plotted here is a plot of the location of the many-body gap as a in a plane whose x-axis is the charge density and the y-axis is the magnetic field, right?
Can you say more about that technique? You said it involves one electron and one
exciton. Yeah, so you're trying to pull out an electron from the band near the chemical potential, but you don't directly pull it out. What you pull out is an electron bound to an exciton that's formed from other bands. Right. So the question is, can you easily pull out an electron from the important band or not? Right. By looking at the energy associated with this trion, you can tell whether or not there's a gap in the band near the chemical potential. Yeah, that's right. It tells you whether there's some density of states for low energy excitations where you can add or remove an electron from the active band. But, this is the first signature, and the story has become much better in the last few months. Right? I'm just, it's probably best not to get too hung up because the data quality is not very good, as you might expect. It's very indirect. So this sets the stage, right? I don't think this technique itself is that important.
That's not
sure. Yeah.
Is finding the possibility that there's no class 3 gap?
No charge 3. No, the exciton is coming from other bands, right? It's it has nothing to do with the low energy physics.
Yeah, I thought this technique is saying the charge 1 is
sufficient. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Oh, I don't know. I don't think we can say anything from this method, right? Sorry? Yeah, it's all coming. And I said, this is the first signature. It's all coming in my slides. It's all being done. So, in fact, they just called this in their paper, signatures of this phenomenon. But, you know, the idea is to look at, so this is the schematic, and to look at the slope of the evolution of the location of the many-body gap in the NB plane. And this, if there is a Hall conductivity, then there's a formula that the Hall conductivity is dNdB, right? So by looking at the slope, you can read off the Hall conductivity, right? So this is a standard experimental way of measuring sigma xy, right? You can do transport, or you can do it by looking at the following the location of the gap in the NB plane, right? And the two numbers in the brackets, one of them is the lattice filling, and the other is the sigma xy. And you see that it, filling one, it's negative because you're filling the valence band with holes. They're talking about holes. At filling one, you get a Hall conductivity of one. At two-thirds, you get a Hall conductivity of two-thirds. And there's some evidence that there's something at three-fifths as well. Okay, so this is the first signature. And it was found at twist angle near 3.5 degrees, though the theory said look near 1.5. And I just met him last week, and he tells me he tried to make the device at 1.5 and failed. So I said, let me just explore something else, right? Let me explore where he could make the device. And though theory didn't predict it, boom, you know, he sees something. So very soon afterwards, a few weeks later, there was a confirmation of this. From a different experiment, which measures the compressibility. Again, I won't tell you exactly how they measured it, but once again, you follow the location where the compressibility vanishes, so the state is incompressible in the NB plane. Again, you see the integer quantum Hall state, and you see this fractional quantum Hall state at two-thirds that goes down essentially to 0 feet, okay? So Liu Jin wants transport, so the experimentalists obliged. And yeah, so again, they used some sort of optical technique. But you know, soon it will be possible to just measure the compressibility directly, you know, using capacitance measurements and so on. That's something that people know how to do. They just haven't done it so far. This is indirect. But you know, you really want to see transport, right? And this highly non-trivial in these TMD systems because for reasons that theorists shouldn't care about, it's very hard to make electrical contacts. But the experimentalists are very clever. They found a clever workaround. Again, I can describe that over lunch if someone cares. But the results speak for themselves. Here is RxX, it's zero, both at two-thirds and three-fifths. And you see hysteresis in RxY. And when it does saturate beyond the coercive field, you see exactly the right value that you expect at these filling fractions, right? And here it's quantized to within 1%, and here within maybe 3% or something, which is very good for a first experiment, right? It's not quantized to one part in a million, but that will probably come, or perhaps. I'll show you, these are the two quantized states that have been observed so far.
Speaking of how good the quantization is, can you remind me in gallium arsenide how good the fractional plottos are quantized?
So one-third is fantastic, right? Now, as you go towards more Jain states,
yeah,
it becomes worse and worse because the gaps become smaller and smaller. Right? Now, here, at one-third, they see an insulator, but they don't see a quantum Hall effect. Right? So they think it's probably a charged density wave. So what it's seen at 2/3 and 3/5 and nowhere else. So far, you know, this is just the beginning of the field. You know, in a few years, the story can be very different. Now at half filling, so if you know anything about the standard quantum Hall effect, you know that there's a very interesting metallic state called a composite Fermi liquid. And there's evidence for such a composite Fermi liquid here, but now at zero field, an anomalous composite Fermi liquid. So, you know, the longitudinal resistivity is basically zero. It's very small. It's not exactly zero. It saturates to a slightly non-zero value. It's about, 5 kilo ohms, maybe 3 to 5 kilo ohms, small compared to H over E squared. And the RXY has hysteresis, and it saturates to a value which is close to 2H over E squared, which is exactly what you expect for a composite Fermi liquid. And furthermore, the RXY, though it shows something like a plateau at 2/3 and 3/5, at 2, RXY just varies linearly with the filling. Right? So all of this is consistent with the composite Fermi liquid. Right? It's a metallic state with a large Hall resistivity. Okay. Clearly, the Hall resistivity is much bigger than the longitudinal resistivity. That's exactly what you expect in a composite Fermi liquid.
Is it clear that a Fermi liquid cannot do that?
Yeah. So, good. So, a Fermi liquid could do that if there's a huge Fermi surface Berry phase. Now, fortunately, here you can just do in the free Fermi gap in the band theory. You can ask how big the Fermi surface Berry phase is, and it's not very big. By this filling, it depends on the details of the Berry curvature distribution in the band.
But actual Hall conductivity in the Fermi liquid can be pretty complicated.
Right? It can be more complicated. There can be interaction terms and so on. But you know the continuity, I think it's really the continuity with the 3/5, right? That it's evolving smoothly. That it's all suggestive, right? I'll show you more data where it's clear that there is something that happens before it becomes a Fermi liquid. So that's the sample of the phenomena. This is what's going on, right, experimentally. So now let me talk about theory. Quantum Hall is a 40-year-old phenomenon, right? So why are we getting excited by even fractional quantum Hall physics in 2023, right? So the reason I'm excited is because there's new questions and new opportunities for both theory and experiment that are not available in any other platform, right? So one of the selling feature of Moiré materials is that they are tunable, right? Experimentalists can easily tune material parameters using just electrical controls. You don't have to make new material. You don't have to do chemistry all over again. Just turn some voltage. So you can tune the bandwidth, as I already mentioned, right? And therefore tune the ratio of bandwidth to correlation strength. You can tune the charge density per unit cell at ease. All of this can be done with gate voltages. So there's hope of Moiré engineering of phases that are close to quantum Hall phases, right? Phases that approximate to quantum Hall phases. There's hope of exploring quantum phase transitions out of quantum Hall phases, right? So all of that are things that we've not been able to do in any other platform for quantum Hall physics. And theoretically, we expect, and I'll give you some examples in this talk, that these proximate phases or the associated phase transitions are very likely to be exotic. They'll involve emergent gapless gauge fields and fractionalized excitations. They provide examples of deconfined critical points or deconfined phases that are different from the fractional quantum Hall phase itself. So this is the kind of thing that many theorists, certainly me, Yin Chen, Chong, Liu Jun, probably many, many people who work with them, have been playing around with for decades. But there's never really been a good experimental platform. But now I think there's real hope that some of this kind of fun theory has a role to play in interpreting actual data, right? So that's why I find this story interesting. So let me give you an example that's already there. You know, the first experiment they do, they already get data like this, right? So the ability to tune out of quantum Hall phases. So D is the perpendicular electric field. It's a displacement field that's perpendicular to the two-dimensional material. So here you see the fractional quantum Hall state. The blue is the Hall resistivity. And as you tune D, you lose the fractional quantum Hall effect, right? And the longitudinal resistivity goes from 0 to some big value before going back again. So this is something you can tune back and forth very easily. You just have to change the top gate voltage and the bottom gate voltage, just turn some knob in the lab and tune across this. And they do this across the full phase diagram, right? So Chong, you were asking about what happens at half filling. So this is the composite Fermi liquid, and you go through something, and then here you get the Fermi liquid, right? So black is a state with high resistivity. So it turns out there's a highly resistive state in between. And you know, the theory, if I get to it, if I get to the end of my slides, I will give an explanation for what's going on there. Okay? So already in the very first experiment, they're able to explore the phase diagram in the quantum Hall state, tune out of the quantum Hall state, and so on and so forth. So let's see what's interesting about these phase transitions and the proximate phases. It doesn't have reflection symmetry at all, even when D is zero, because the Moiré system, it's the reflection will, the way the Moiré system works, this Moiré TMD works within a single valley. The only symmetry you have, you have charge conservation, right? And then you have lattice translation and C3 rotation symmetry. You have no other symmetries.
So you are below the energy scale.
Absolutely. So in most of this phase diagram, experimentally, they know that the valley is polarized, right? They see hysteretic transport. So time reversal is not there, so I didn't include it, right? That's very, very low symmetry system. So it then also raises questions for theory, you know, what kinds of phases and phase transitions can occur in this low symmetry setting. So let me switch to theory, and as I explained to Chong when we were discussing this talk, at least to some of the senior theorists in the room, I don't really need to explain the theory very much. The theory is easy to explain, but what's important is the context, the background, which necessitates doing this kind of theory at the present moment. Right. So I'll probably go a bit fast through this theory, the field theory portion of things. But I'm around all week, so I'm happy to chat. So some obvious competitors to the fractional quantum anomalous Hall phase in these Moiré-Chern bands. First, as Lujan, that's what you were asking. It turns out that the ferromagnetism is more stable than the fractional quantum Hall effect experimentally. And so, you know, it makes sense to not worry about the competition with ferromagnetism, right? And say that your valley polarized and just focus on the physics within a single valley, right? So at commensurate lattice filling, you can certainly get, you know, charged density wave insulators that spontaneously break lattice symmetry, right? And at any filling with increasing bandwidth, you can certainly get a Landau Fermi liquid. Right? If the bandwidth is very big, interactions will have a weak effect. You just get a Fermi liquid state. So you can have a fractional quantum Hall state. You can have a CDW insulator and also just have a Fermi liquid. Of course, many other phases are possible, but these are some of the obvious players that whose computation is going to determine the physics. Right? Okay, so this is the outline for the theory portion of the talk. And again, as I keep saying, doesn't matter if I don't get through everything, that all the slides that I've prepared. So there's two distinct theoretical stories that are worth telling, given the current state of affairs. The first is about the competition between the fractional quorum Hall state and the charged density weight state at commensurate filling. So what does it one can derive, and I'll describe that, is a quantum Ginzburg-Landau theory that describes this competition and which can be used to discuss the phase transition. Okay? And so one of the things that emerges from this discussion is that quite naturally, at depending on filling fraction, when you leave the quorum Hall phase to reach a CDW insulator, the resulting CDW phase has no electrical Hall effect, but has a coexisting neutral topological order that has never been realized in any experiment before. Right? So this may be an opportunity to engineer this kind of state in an experimental system. Okay? And the second story is about the evolution from the composite Fermi liquid to the Landau Fermi liquid. So here it turns out there's very concrete predictions for experiments that are probably within reach in the near term. And certainly there's preliminary data already that looks pretty good. Yeah? So the topological order, now there's no charge, there's no quorum Hall signal. There's no coupling to the to an external gauge field.
Neons, but none of them carry charge.
Exactly, yeah. Okay, so the useful framework to discuss the quorum Hall phase and its vicinity, right, is to do what are known as partons. It's a standard theoretical tool in condensed matter physics by now. So you write the electron operator as a product of a boson and a fermion, and we'll call these partons. This boson will carry the charge of the electron, and the fermion F will be neutral. And this representation comes with the gauge redundancy. We can rotate the phase of phi and F in opposite ways locally. A key feature is that this gauge redundancy leads to a constraint that phi and F both have the same density. And since phi carries the charge of the electron, the phi is at the same density as the electron. So phi, F, and the electron all live at the same lattice filling. Okay? So in the parton framework, instead of working with the original electron system, we work with the reformulation in terms of phi and F instead of the original C operators. Now, the price you pay for working with these weird variables is that this gauge redundancy leads to the presence of a dynamical U1 gauge field that the phi and F couple to. Okay? So schematically, we work with the Lagrangian, where phi couples little a, F couples little a with the opposite charge, and I've included a background probe U1 gauge field that we can use to discuss electrical transport and other response. So the point is that we can discuss the phase diagram and phase transitions of the electronic system, the universal aspects, in a faithful manner within the parton representation. It will give us access to the phase diagram in a way that's easy within this framework, but hard within the if you just work with electrons. Okay. So this framework is very, very general. So let me describe, or for some of you, review how it works. Now, suppose we are interested in exploring the vicinity of some base phase P. Right? In our case, this base phase will be the quorum Hall state. Right? But what I'm going to talk about in the next two or three slides is much more general. Right? So the idea is going to be that we put the parton F itself in the phase P, right? We assume that the parton has formed the phase P that we are whose vicinity we are trying to anyway describe. Now, if phi forms a superfluid, meaning the phi is condensed, right? So in a Higgs phase of phi, then at long wavelengths, the dynamical gauge field gets locked to the external gauge field. So then the effective Lagrangian is just F coupled to the background gauge field A. So just describe the electronic system in the original phase that I was interested in the phase P. So this is just the world's most complicated way of describing phase P, right? I do this spot on, and then I basically make the F by condensing phi. I make the F just be the original electron, right? But we can move out of the phase P to other phases P prime by now letting the boson phi not form a superfluid, right? If we move out of the superfluid phase of the bosons, then in the, for the original electrons, we move out of the original phase that we were interested in, okay? So a good example of how this works, forget about quantum Hall for a second, of how this works, is to think about a Fermi liquid and its evolution into a Morton slater. So then my base phase is the, my phase P is the Fermi liquid. I put F in a state with the Fermi surface, and to get the Fermi liquid, I just condense the phi, right, which Higgs's all the internal gauge fields, and then the F just becomes the electron because phi has an expectation value, right? And then F just forms, the electron is then in a Fermi liquid. So I want to move out of the Fermi liquid, and let's say my lattice filling is one spinful electron per site, then the phi will also be at lattice filling one. Then I can put phi in a bosonic Morton slater, and at low energies, I'll then get an electronic Morton slater, but the F will continue to form a Fermi surface, and so I'll get what's a quantum spin liquid state where there's an emergent neutral Fermi surface. Okay? And this framework enables one to address the nature of a continuous Morton transition from the Fermi liquid to this weird Morton slater. Okay? And the transition just becomes the superfluid insulator transition of the boson phi in the presence of this dynamical gauge field and the Fermi surface of F. Okay? Now, it turns out that this problem is essentially tractable, and the gauge fields and the fermions, these F fermions, can be argued to decouple from this critical phi sector, and you can make all kinds of predictions for experiment and so on and so forth. Right? So this example illustrates the power of this framework to describe phase transitions out of any given phase of matter. Okay, so here we are interested in understanding what happens in the vicinity of the fractional quantum Hall state on a lattice at some rational lattice filling P over Q. Right? So and as I explained, the partons are also at the same lattice filling. So nu e is the same as nu phi and nu f. So we'll follow the same strategy and put f in the fractional quantum Hall state. Now, if the phi forms a superfluid, then the electrons themselves will just be in the fractional quantum Hall state. So this is the complicated but correct way of describing the original fractional quantum Hall state. So we want to move out of the fractional quantum Hall state. And one way to do it is to put phi in a Morton slater. Right? You're at some rational filling, so you can try to form a Morton slater, and that will destroy the quantum Hall response. Okay? But at fractional lattice filling, the phi boson cannot form a trivial Morton slater. It has to do something, right? You just can't put one boson at every lattice site because the filling is a fraction. So the simplest option is that phi forms a CdW. You know, it breaks the lattice translation symmetry spontaneously. So then the competition between the fractional quantum Hall phase and the CdW gets limited to the much simpler problem of the competition between the superfluid and the CdW of bosons, of the bosons phi, at some specific rational filling. So this problem is something that we've all studied for about 20 years now. And it's somewhat non-trivial, but you know, we've understood how to deal with it for 20 years, right? So the technology is in place. So the crucial, the, what makes it non-trivial is that the rational filling P over Q provides some important constraints on the low energy theory, right? So one thing we know is that there is something that there's a lot of work in PI on, this Liebschultz-Madis restriction, that at this filling, you cannot have a trivial gap phase. Any gap phase must either break symmetry or must have topological order or something. And a naive Ginzburg-Landau theory that just focuses on the superfluid order parameter will not be faithful to these filling constraints. Right? No, you can think of it as some sort of anomaly which is not present, which is with the low energy theory must have, but the Nyve-Ginzburg-Landau theory doesn't have. So it's a wrong theory. So you need a correct Ginzburg-Landau theory, a quantum Ginzburg-Landau theory that correctly incorporates the filling constraints, right? So there's a the way this problem was tamed 20 years back was to obtain this theory by using a dual description in terms of vortices, right? So there's this famous charge-vortex duality for bosons in two space dimensions, where we trade a description in terms of the bosons to a description in terms of vortices, so the superfluid order parameter, right? And in 2D, the vortices are point defects, so the dual theory will be written in terms of a field whose quanta are these vortices. Now, a vortex sees the particle density as an effective magnetic field, and it sees the particle current as an effective electric field. And since the density and current can fluctuate, this means that the vortex sees a fluctuating internal electromagnetic field. So the theory, this dual vortex theory, becomes a theory of vortices that are coupled to a dynamical U1 gauge field. Right? So this story goes back to the late 1970s by these people. So it's something that's in textbooks by now. Okay. Now we want to do this charge vortex duality for bosons at fractional filling on the lattice. Since the vortices see the background charge as magnetic field, this means the vortices at a filling here, 1 over q, the vortices see a flux of 2 pi over q through each lattice plaquette. Right? So there's a picture at 1/3 filling on the triangular lattice. The vortices will see 2 pi over 3 flux on the dual honeycomb lattice. This means that acting on the vortices, translation becomes projective, right? And the skew degenerate species of vortices in the dual theory. So that's the only modification compared to the standard duality for vortices for bosons at integer filling. Okay, so the quantum Ginzburg-Landau theory then takes the form, the skew species of vortex fields that are coupled to the usual gauge field, the vortices C, and the external probe field couples the flux, so this usual gauge field. And translation acts projectively on these 5EI fields and in a manner that you can work out given the explicit lattice symmetries and so on. So the vortices are gapped, as usual you get a superfluid. So you can see this from the response. If 5E is gapped, then you can forget about B. Then you integrate out B, that sets A to 0, which tells you that it's a superfluid. The electromagnetic field doesn't penetrate. Now, if 5V is condensed, meaning that you enter a Higgs phase of this theory, you get a more translator. But the fact that translations act non-trivially on 5V means that you break lattice translation symmetry, right? So you get charge density wave order. So this theory, it's consistent with filling constraints. It incorporates filling constraints. And it captures both the superfluid and CDW orders. And so it provides for a mean field starting point to discuss the possibility of a direct second order transition between these two phases, which cannot happen in standard Landau theory, right? But it, you know, this dual theory, it gives you, you know, raises the possibility of such a transition.
Can you clarify that the filling constraint is incorporated as a symmetry of the...
Yeah, so the projective action of translations on the vortices is how the filling constraint gets incorporated. Okay, so now we can apply this to the competition between the fractional quantum Hall and CDW state at fractional filling. So we take this sector, so we're going to put F in the Laughlin 1/3, for instance, at 1/3. We're going to put F in the Laughlin 1/3 state and let phi undergo a superfluid to CDW insulator transition, right? So the phi, the F sector is described by the Stern-Simons theory, and the phi sector is described by this dual vortex theory, right? So now we can combine these two, and it's a one-line step. You do the integral over the little a gauge field to get to this form. It looks similar to the superfluid CDW transition theory, except that now the internal gauge field has a Chern-Simons term, right, at level 3, if you're talking about the Laughlin one-third state. So this theory is, the way to think about it is that it's a quantum Ginzburg-Landau theory that as you tune parameters can capture both the quantum Hall and the CDW insulator phases. So you can use it to describe all kinds of phenomena, universal phenomena associated with this competition between the two phases, including the possibility of a direct second order transition.
Let's wrap this up in about 5 to 10 minutes.
5 to 10 minutes? All right, very good. I'll do that. Yeah, no, I need to eat too. So we can ask what happens. So in the experiments, currently at filling one-third, you see the CDW, but not the fractional quantum Hall. And, but the fractional quantum Hall state is close by. So you have this phase competition. So you can ask what happens at filling two-thirds. One option is to just particle hole conjugate the previous theory. That will give you a transition to a CDW state, but the particle hole conjugate of the trivial CDW, the CDW coexisting with an integer quantum Hall effect, right? So which will have very clear experimental signatures. So you can ask whether you can have a transition to a CDW without any quantum Hall response. And the framework is exactly what it describes. You can just run with that framework again. And the natural CDW state that you get out has this U1 level 2 topological order with no coupling to the background gauge field.
The CDW seen in the actual material has no Hall response?
They haven't imaged the CDW order at all. All they know is transport, right? In transport, it's rho xx is much, much bigger than rho xy, as should happen in an ordinary insulator, but no anomalous Hall. Yeah, I hope so. It's very, very hard, as you know. But not at the current time. The other groups whose data I didn't show have tried to do scaling and so on. But, it's too much to ask them to do in a first paper. clearly, they have the capability. But, so this neutral topological order is not going to be visible in electrical transport, right? You had to do thermal Hall, which is very hard, right? And a source of intense controversy in any material, right? But perhaps the state, given how naturally it arises out of this framework, perhaps the state is lurking close by in the phase diagram in these materials. Right? That would be amazing, right? Because this state has never made an appearance in any experiment so far, right? And maybe it will, and in these Moiré systems. All right, let me wrap up. So let me just flash a couple of slides on this story. The composite Fermi-liquid to Fermi-liquid evolution. So I won't go through all the slides. I'll just talk about the experimental part of the predictions that come out of this. So there's evidence for this in numerics. There's evidence for this in experiment. And there's evidence that you can tune from the CFL to FL by just tuning the displacement field, right? So years back, there was a description of this transition using the same Partron framework. You write C equals phi F, put F in a Fermi surface, phi is in a superfluid, you get the Landau Fermi liquid. But the idea is that if phi forms a nu equals half Laughlin state, then you get the composite Fermi liquid. So then the question is, so this transition gets related to this Laughlin to superfluid transition of bosons at nu equals half plus the coupling to all these other things. Now, it turns out that this original work paid no attention to the lattice filling. And so they said that you need reflection symmetry to protect the direct transition. In this system, we don't have reflection symmetry, but we do have to pay attention to the lattice filling. And so let me just claim that the critical theory looks like this, that some in the boson sector, it's a theory of two massless Dirac fermions coupled to U1 gauge field with some Chern-Simons terms. In a large N expansion, this flows to a CFT, but we don't know what happens at finite N. But But the more basic question is, can this transition at all happen in this low symmetry environment, right? So it turns out that it can, and all you need is translation symmetry, right? So I don't have time to explain this, but the punchline is that you don't need deflection symmetry. The filling constraint alone is enough to protect this transition. Sorry? What fixes the flux? So that's, you know, there's a part on ansatz in which you fix the flux. And the question is that stable or not? It is stable. So there's no reason why the, you know, so there is a symmetry transformation for the fermions, which is stable, right? And that then fixes the, so to get the Laughlin, the U1 level 2 state, you need a particular flux, right? That's in some of the intermediate slides that I've skipped, right? But you need to have this pi flux, and that then leads to a direct transition. It's protected purely by translation and filling constraints. And an interesting feature of this transition is the critical point is power law CdW fluctuations. There is no CdW order on either side in the experiment, in the phase diagram. So you can apply this. So that was a description of just the boson sector. And you can apply this to the full transition and argue that there can be a second order CFL to FL transition predicted by just the lattice symmetry alone. And this has implications for the transport across the transition. So there's a rule in this for transport in these parton theories, which is the resistivities of the phi and f partons add in series. It's known as the Offey-Larkin rule, derived in the 1980s. So here, so the total resistivity is the sum of these two resistivities, and the fermion resistivity evolves smoothly across the transition, you know, to zeroth order. But the boson resistivity changes dramatically because it's undergoing the superfluid to Laughlin transition. So in the Laughlin state, the boson resistivity tensor is purely off-diagonal and quantized, where in the Fermi liquid it's zero, in the superfluid it's zero. But at the critical point, the boson resistivity tensor is order h over e squared times the universal tensor. So then this means that the total measured resistivity will then both the longitudinal and Hall components will have a universal jump across the transition. So transport will look something like this in an ideal clean system. So rho xx has a certain value and it sort of continues, but right at the critical point at zero temperature, there's a jump, right? At finite temperatures will be rounded off in a universal manner, right? So this size of this jump is some universal number. It's in universal amplitude associated with the bosonic sector. And likewise, rho xy will jump by 2h over e squared as you go across this transition. It'll jump by a universal amount, but the value just to the left and just to the right will differ by 2h over e squared, which again is something that's potentially a test, an experimental test of what goes on. Now, the other thing that can be measured in experiment is the compressibility. And here's something interesting that happens. The compressibility is non-zero in either phase. These are compressible phases. But the critical point, the compressibility is dominated by this boson sector, which is some sort of CFT, presumably. And then the compressibility goes to zero linearly with temperature. Right? So you have an incompressible metallic critical point between two compressible metallic phases. And that again is something in an ideal clean system may be possible to probe. But let me conclude with this slide. But there is something interesting beyond a direct transition, because real life, you're never in a clean system. You always have disorder. And you can analyze the effects of disorder. And I said, but didn't explain, that there's critical CdW fluctuations at this transition. And it turns out the disorder is most likely a strongly relevant perturbation. So disorder will pin the CDW fluctuations and introduce an intermediate insulating phase of the bosons. But if the disorder is weak, the F fermions will survive as diffusive neutral excitations. So the expectation for the phase diagram is that in the clean system, you could have a direct transition. But with disorder, you open up an intermediate insulating phase, which has insulating electrical transport, has local CDW order, which in the future, maybe perhaps people can image with STM or something. But we'll have metallic thermal transport that is more or less unchanged as you tune the displacement field. All these three phases will have almost the same longitudinal thermal conductivity, right? And that is hard, not as hard as measuring the thermal Hall effect, but it may be doable. People have measured it in monolayer systems through noise measurements, right? So what you expect to see in experiments is that rho xx evolves between these two metallic phases with low longitudinal resistivity through an intermediate insulating phase with huge longitudinal resistivity. And this is more or less what's seen in current experiments. But the prediction will be that if you measure thermal transport, it's more or less smooth across this transition. It's a hard but maybe not impossible experiment. No, locally around each impurity, you nucleate CDW order, right? And these, the random potential, there'll be puddles of CDW of different orientations. Yeah, you could think of those as domains, yeah. Yeah, but those are neutral edge modes. Yeah, you could think of those as, that's not right. So within each domain, you already have mobile neutral fermions in the bulk, not just the edge. Right? No, they're not gapped, they're gapless. The F fermion's not affected. They'll be affected by Anderson localization, but at weak disorder, that's exponentially large in the disorder strength, while the size of the domains is just some power law large in the disorder strength, right? So there's a big separation of scales. All these Moiré devices are micron size. So at weak disorder, I think you can more or less forget about Anderson localization. After all, you don't see it in the metallic phase, right? So you don't expect it in this phase. Anyway, so that's the summary. More than the details of the theory that I've talked about, the main point I want to emphasize is the following. Many of us work on ultra-quantum, ultra-exotic phases and phase transitions. The most exotic things that have been seen in experiments so far are fractional quantum Hall states, right? They have anions, they have non-Fermi liquids, they may have non-abelian anions, and so on, right? Now, the interesting thing about the recent realization of the fractional quantum Hall state in these tunable platforms is that you can probe the proximate phases and phase transitions. And what the message from theory, right, is that these proximate phases, either the proximate phases or the phase transitions, they inherit, I don't know if there's a word, but let me use it anyway, the exoticity of the quantum Hall state, right? And they're doing something interesting that we don't have realizations of in other experimental systems before, right? So we're using the fractional quantum Hall state as a launching pad to reach some other exotic things which don't have the same experimental signatures as the quantum Hall state itself. Right? I gave a couple of examples, two or three examples, but I think there's a lot more that can be, that will probably be realized. And so that's, to me, is what's really interesting about this. And there's clearly going to be lots of experiments on these systems, right? There's a lot of things that people are trying to do, and I think it'd be very interesting to see where the field goes. Okay, so let me stop there.
special for the Morris?
It's certainly something specific to these Moiré materials because, so one of the ways, you could ask, can it do that in graphene? To some extent, you can. You take bilayer graphene, right? It has a nearly quadratic band touching, and you turn on a perpendicular electric field, you open up that neutrality, you get an insulator, right? But away from neutrality, there's not much tuning that you can do with a displacement field. The big bandwidth in ordinary graphene is electron volts, right? The displacement field you apply will be, tens of millivolts, maybe 100 millivolts over a nanometer, right? So it's not going to affect something that has an electron volt dispersion, except maybe it's special band touching like points. But here, the bandwidths are small, right? And because it's Moiré, it's very sensitive to the interplay between the two layers that are interfering to form the Moiré. You apply a displacement field, an electric field that way, you're driving electrons preferentially from one layer to the other. So the impact of the other layers felt differently depending on the layer polarization. Right? So the band structure is very sensitive to the displacement field. But that's great for us, right? We can tune things and study all kinds of things.
So in these topologically ordered systems, the anions should probably have some quantum numbers under the crystal symmetry.
Absolutely, yeah. I've read several of your papers for that reason. I think these may be the best. The kind of question you're asking, I don't know that it's currently experimentally accessible. For instance, it would be very interesting to ask in the various fractional quantum Hall states that are seen, what happens if you have a lattice defect, right? If you create a lattice disclination, can it bind a fractional charge, right? It's supposed to be able to do that, right? For the U1 level 2. Forget the U1 level 2. That we don't know whether it's, we hope it's there in experiments. We don't know that it's there. But the U1 level 3 is definitely there in the experiment, right? So is the 3/5 state, which has some more complicated K matrix, right? Now at 1/3, I think it's correct that disclinations will bind an electric charge of 1/9, right? A C3, there's C3 rotation symmetry. So a C3 destination, it's like 1/3 of a vortex, right? So it binds, one of you guys must know this code, right? So in the future, one can dream that people engineer a Moiré lattice destination, come with the charge sensor, and then measure the fractional charge. But those are way, way into the future, right?
I meant that even if you don't measure fractional charges, like the anion should carry fractional, say, angular momentum or something like that.
Under C3,
yeah,
but those are also hard to probe, right? Theoretically, you could ask a question, which is for the 2/3 state, the topological order that's there is presumably the same as the particle hole conjugate of the Laughlin 1/3 state, but the symmetry enrichment by translation, since we understand all the possibilities, right? The classification. Is the state here the same as what happens in the Landau level with a weak periodic potential, or is it a new state? Now, the guess is that it's the same state as the Landau level, but this again gives a good thing to put in the introduction of papers of people who are doing classification of SET phases. The symmetries permute anions? Not in the 2/3 state. There's only two anions and they have different charges. You can't permute. Right? There's no two distinct equivalent anions. But again, who knows what else will be realized as the field moves forward. In some sense, that's the main message I want to say. This gives us all justification to do what we've always been doing. Not that we need the justification, but it's nice to have it.
There are no more questions, let's thank Samson again.